Blog Talk Radio.
Welcome to the Institute for Personal Development, Kriya Yoga Ashram, where total consciousness is the new frontier.
Kriya Yoga is union of the individual with the divine. Join us as we explore the practices to initiate this process.
Good morning. Welcome to the Voice of Yoga. Let's Talk Consciousness. I am your hostess, Lisa Winton, and with me is Kenny Choi, also known as Swami Jayananda, founder of the Institute for Personal Development, located here in Hampton, New Hampshire. Good morning, Swami. Thanks for being here today. How are you?
Good morning. I'm doing pretty good today. How about you?
I'm doing pretty good today. Thanks for asking. And we want to thank you, listeners, for tuning in. Today in the Voice of Yoga, we'll be talking about the major differences between secular approaches to yoga and yoga as a spiritual science. Listen as we discuss the importance of the statement, no yoga, no apotheosis. No yoga, no apotheosis. We will explore the common misconception that all yoga is leading to the same goal. In this episode, the focus will be on why asana is the third stage of yoga and why starting with asana may not be the best decision. Welcome to the Voice of Yoga. We are talking consciousness. Join the Kriya Yoga Spiritual Advance. Get the light in your soul and live out from the perfection of being. So, Swami, we did mention in the summary that about asana being the third stage of yoga. Can you just briefly go over for our listeners what the stages of yoga are?
Yeah, they are yama, which are the abstentions, niyama, which are the observances, asana, which is posture, pranayama, which is control of prana, pratyahara, which is sense withdrawal, dharana, which is concentration, dhyana is meditation, and samadhi is illumination or contemplation.
So we said that we were going to talk about the major differences between secular approaches to yoga and yoga as a spiritual science. So let's start talking about those. What are some of the major differences?
Yeah, in order to really call what you're doing yoga, it really should include all eight of those stages. However, we have modernized it. We have made it more user-friendly. We have dissected it, and now we have diluted it. And so there are what is referred to as diversity among practices of yoga. And a lot of people think asana, the physical postures, are yoga. And of course, yoga in its original format is a spiritual science. And in order to really distinguish between what you're doing and what you're calling, because that seems to be the consensus, is whatever it is that you're doing, it's all yoga. It's all good, and it's all leading to the same spot. And that's one of the things that I'd like to cover in this show, is that not all that glitters is gold. That if what you're doing is modified, diluted, watered down as self-made system, then it can't possibly yield the same return that what Patanjali's wrote down in the eight essential stages of yoga.
So if somebody is using yoga classes as a fitness regimen, that's very different than what yoga is really designed to do, which I believe is was to raise your consciousness level.
Yeah, the goal of Kriya Yoga, that what we teach, is total consciousness. And it's not about getting your hand to the floor or your foot on your head. It's really about getting the light in your soul. It's about the union of the individual with the divine. And as you start to break down your approach to yoga, if you don't start with yama and the abstentions, non-injury, non-lying, non-stealing, non-greed, non-sensuality, then what you're doing is going to suffer as far as the return on your effort. Because of those five abstentions, non-sensuality really is translated, was translated from brahmacharya, which means carrier of Brahman. And unless the individual is joined with the life force and separates from their attachment to what is visible and tangible or invisible and tangible, then what you're doing will not become or yield a spiritual return.
So it's like, let the buyer beware. So if somebody just is walking into a yoga class just to do postures, that's one thing. But for an instructor to maybe promise something more than just a stretching class, that's kind of like where the consumer needs to kind of put up the hand and say, oh, I better be careful here.
Yeah, you really want to be an educated consumer, and you really want to know, like, what is the difference between a secular approach to yoga and a spiritual approach? And you're really not going to be able to get a well-constructed answer or explanation for what that is from somebody who has a secular approach to yoga. Because a lot of people, unfortunately, they're misinformed about what it is that they're doing, that they think that by doing a particular physical exercise, that by calling it yoga, that it is going to have spiritual benefits. It will have metaphysical results. When in fact, if you don't understand that it is a science, which means that the eight essential stages of yoga are instruction to do something. And a major difference between a secular and a spiritual approach to yoga is that the secular approach is going to be limited to the law of karma. That you will have a belief in two powers, you can get benefit, you can get results with a belief in two powers, but at the very best, what you'll be able to do is change finite bad into finite good. That it's not going to bring you to the divine law, the divine law of harmony. It's not going to bring you to unity consciousness. It will not yield that return. And that is what we call the physics of spirituality. That in order for us to be spiritual, we must draw from spirit. You can't draw from fear and limitation. You can't draw from particles and waves and still become spiritual.
What do you mean when you say drawing from fear and limitation? What would that look like if we were doing that?
Yeah, see, that's duality. If you are drawing from the appearance of a reality that is apart from unity, you have a belief in two powers. You are drawing from a source of sustenance that is limited. We have discussed this a number of times with the principle of manifestation, that the concept of spirit, God, is everywhere and in everything. No one sees it. Why? Because it's whole, it's complete. Our senses work on contrast. In order for something to materialize, to manifest, to appear, it must split from unity. It manifests in half and leaves behind a complementary, unmanifested other part. That's the trinity that we use in yoga. That's Ida, Pingala, Sushumna. And that's the same trinity that has been used in other spiritual sciences and denominations. Things like Brahman, Vishnu, Shiva, the Father, the Son, the Holy Spirit. That the trinity has typically been a way of establishing a reality system that can be scientifically delineated. If you just try and understand yourself from particles, you're going to be missing two-thirds of the equation. To understand the law of karma, the belief in two powers, that what is visible and tangible, what's invisible and tangible, can be a stepping stone to what is invisible and intangible, is a very specific technique that one must employ.
I want to get back to the 8 essential stages of yoga. So if somebody was to start off with asana, the third stage, is that going to create maybe some challenges for them if they haven't employed the first or second stages of yoga first?
Well, to answer your question, there's really nothing definitive about it because you don't really know a person's level of consciousness, their degree of awareness. You don't understand or know their level of interest in what it is that they're doing. It's not that, it's kind of like, I like what C.S. Lewis said, that if you're driving somewhere and you miss your turn, to continue going in the direction that you're going may not get you closer to your destination. So that could be a very similar thing, that somebody who is sincere and dedicated to their asana practice that wants to go further, then you're going to have to understand that you have a specific goal. And to add yama to what it is that you're doing can be beneficial. But by the same token, if you think that doing asana, you have graduated to the third stage and you don't need one and two, that's what I'm talking about.
So it's kind of like putting together pieces of a puzzle. You really need all of the pieces continuously in your growth training.
Yeah, and I think the analogy I like, it's more like making a smoothie. That does it matter if you put the banana in before the apple? Kind of thing, or before the blueberries, or whatever goes in first, it's all going to wind up and get blended into one simple concoction. And I think that that's kind of like the way that you want to approach your yoga practice. But you have to remember that if you modify the recipe and you eliminate ingredients, that if you wanted a blueberry smoothie and you didn't have blueberries and you decided to go ahead with it anyway, when you're done with it, it may not resemble what it was intended to be. And I think that's typically what happens, is that we approach yoga in a modified, diluted format, and it brings us to a certain experience. And then what we do is we have a tendency to glamorize what it is that we're experiencing, even though it falls way short of the actual intention or the true mystical experience of total consciousness.
So a quick question for you, Swami. Why is asana the third stage of yoga?
Well, I think primarily you want to understand that your physical body is not your goal. That doing a yoga practice isn't really about looking younger, living longer, being more desirable. That your body becomes the means. And in the framework of starting with yama, then niyama, one of the major adjustments that takes place as you're employing the observances and the abstentions is that you start to understand how to use the mind. And once you start to work with your body and you start using your mind in the framework of a practice, and your mind moves into its rightful position as an avenue of awareness of the presence of the causal spiritual dimension, that is when you can start to maximize your return on your efforts.
All right, well, I think this is a good place to pause to hear a word from our sponsors. So listeners, we will be back with you in just a few moments. Kriya Yoga Theory 1, Human Development and the 8 Essential Stages of Kriya Yoga. This program is a comprehensive course that will help you get your arms around the science of Kriya Yoga. It provides a clear understanding of the goals and objectives behind yoga, along with the physics of spirituality. It includes the practices, supportive concepts of Kriya Yoga, and the process in human development, apotheosis, the process of the human becoming divine. A complete guide on how to become a human in the adult state. Get the light in your soul and experience the simplicity and joy of union with the divine. This course is available in live classes at the ashram or online with 8 videos or 4 CDs. Visit our website, www.ipdtransform.com, for more information. Welcome back. For those of you just joining us, you're listening to The Voice of Yoga, and we are talking consciousness. So, Swami, we're talking about asana, and should that be our focus, and why is the third stage of yoga? So what is it that we should be thinking of when we entering into a yoga program, and what's the decision making that should be involved in with us in, as it relates to asana?
Well, again, it's going to have to do with what your goals and objectives are, because if you are just happy with changing finite bad to finite good, then working with your physical body may be exactly what you want to be doing, because you'll be working with your body and with your five sense mind. But if you want to know the truth, the whole truth, and nothing but the truth, then you're going to have to move beyond rational thinking. You're going to have to move beyond sensual perception, which is pratyahara, sense withdrawal, and start to access the higher aspects of the mind, the higher mind, which is a faculty that doesn't work in the same medium that our rational mind works in. The rational mind works in duality. The testimony of our senses is what it focuses on. But what you'll find is that if that becomes your focal point, then you will perpetuate the law of karma. You will be constantly in a battle of trying to change finite bad to finite good. But if you want to rise above your karmic pattern and you want to get out of the cycle of death and rebirth, then you're going to have to understand the function of the higher mind, and you're going to have to learn how to access the divine law, which is the absolute law of harmony, peace, love, ananda, bliss.
So it sounds like we had to change our perception of what we think yoga is. Like I said earlier, it's not just a fitness program or fitness exercise. It really is designed to do something for us. And as we say in every show, it's all about getting the light in our soul. So what does that look like when we're doing that?
Yeah, once you start to understand that rising above karma is your optimal position of performance, to be able to access the higher mind and to think in the framework of the absolute is optimal. And the reason being is because the causal spiritual body holds the template for perfect creation. And once you can start to align yourself with the perfection of being, like I had said earlier, you turn your mind into an avenue of awareness for the presence of a force that is invisible and intangible and doesn't report in the five sense mind. That's one of the reasons why the Bible says, "Be still and know that I am God." The language of spirit is silence, stillness. And most of us think that the core of life is animation and sensation, but it's just the opposite. And that's why in the opening statement we say, no yoga, which is N-O, no yoga, no union with the divine, there's no apotheosis, there's no positive growth of consciousness. There's no expansion of the mind out of the realms of duality. But to know yoga, K-N-O-W yoga, then you K-N-O-W know apotheosis. And apotheosis is the process of us becoming divine. What we learned is that it is not magic, but it's physics. It's basic, like attracts like, and two things can't occupy the same space at the same time. So when you're looking at yoga as a game plan to initiate a process in development, where we go from unconscious awareness to self-conscious awareness to superconscious awareness, that's very different than somebody who is just trying to maybe get a little bit more pleasure out of their human experience.
Well, there might be some people out there that maybe thinking, well, if we already are eternal spiritual beings and we're already made in God's perfect image, then why would we even need an exercise program? Why would we even need asana posture?
Yeah, and the reason is because even though on a deep metaphysical level that we are already eternal spiritual beings, we are kind of trapped in a corporeal physical body. And our identity is bound up and it's obscuring our ability to see the perfection of being. And how we think is what we become. And so we're thinking with a five-sense mind. We're thinking and acquiring information from a dimension of reality that is apart from the perfection of being. And so we're in harmony with the truth of our being. And as a result, we get sick, we have complicated problems in our lives, there's suffering, there's decay, there's sickness, death, and these are none of the things that would come under the jurisdiction of divine law. As an eternal spiritual being, externalized as this perfect being, would have a completely different reality than the one that we're getting because we're thinking with our lower mind. We're thinking with a dimension of our makeup that is limiting.
So there's a lot of yoga instructors and teachers out there in the world, especially in this country. Or what would you say to them that would be the one key that would help them maybe instruct a better class?
Well, again, I find it really hard to target general statements when you don't know a person's goal or objective. Like I said, some people are really happy with secular yoga. They're really happy with being popular, making themselves more desirable, and making the human experience maybe a little bit more pleasurable, more profitable. However you want to work with your mind-body complex. But for somebody that wants to get the goal and objective out of the intention of yoga as a spiritual science, then for those people, I would say, you're really going to have to examine what it is that you're doing. The way that we do it is we start looking at the physical body, that your physical body is a diagram of what's going on in your consciousness. So the shape, the composition, the condition of your body, how the segments of your body line up, the range of motion you have at the articulations has an effect on how we think, how we feel, how we perform. And it's one thing if we do this with our personal will, personal ambition. But to maximize the human experience, we must usher in the performance of divine mind, this union of the individual with the divine, because then we no longer have to deal with the conflicting forces of karma, of the polar opposites, of a reality that's a mix of good and evil, that it's good that can become evil, it's life that can die. When you're dealing with the absolute, you are out of the law of karma. And when you are in the absolute divine law of harmony and love, then you're in the perfection of being. And if you want to get there, you have to give up your personal sense of self. You have to give up your personal ambitions and desires and attune yourself with divine law.
So if anybody has any type of discomfort in their body, that's a strong indicator that there is not harmony with that person.
Yeah, if you're dealing with sickness and suffering of any form, and if on a very deep fundamental level, you have a belief in something other than the one power of this universe. You have a belief in something that is dualistic.
And then what you always say, I think, is, and that's really what relates to what we would call sin.
Yeah. And of course, interpreted as the archery term, missing the mark, that we're drawing from a dimension of reality that cannot give us this experience of wholeness. Because there's an innate drive in each and every one of us that we want to be whole, we want to be complete. And that's when you read in the Bible the whole thing of the wrath of God. What a lot of us don't understand is that this wrath of God really is divine love. It is God telling us not to accept anything other than the perfection of our own being.
So earlier you had actually talked about that living out from the perfection of being. But that might be a phrase that could be new for a lot of people. Could you summarize that again for us? What does that look like when we're doing it? How what would be the first step to get there?
Well, the first step is you have to acknowledge that reality is multidimensional, that there is a dimension of reality that doesn't report in our senses, that is whole, complete, perfect. It is the finished kingdom of heaven now. And if we draw from that, then that is what we will become. We've said this a number of times. I mean, this is what in Christianity, why the command is to love God. Well, God is the Christian term for this dimension of reality that is whole, complete. The Buddhists say the same thing when they say you must desire nothing. Because this dimension that is whole and complete is the void or the nothing out of which everything comes. It is the only dimension of reality that has no vibration. It's frequency free. But it holds the template for perfect creation.
Well, I guess about that time to start closing down our program for today. So listeners, be sure to visit our websites, www.ipdtransform.com. On the homepage, you'll see about 3/4 of the way down, Swami Says Recent Posts, and you'll see a number of our shows listed there. You can click on for your continued learning experiences. And be sure to tune in to our Facebook Live episodes we do every Wednesday at 5 o'clock. So Swami, do you have any other final thoughts about today's program?
Well, I would like to encourage people to maybe examine what it is that they're doing and maybe reflect on what goals and objectives they may personally have, because I think the key to understanding ourselves spiritually or understanding spiritual yoga begins with recognizing that there is a big difference between secular yoga and spiritual yoga. With that, I'll wish everybody a good day. Namaste.
And thank you for listening to our program, The Voice of Yoga. This is Lisa Winton, along with Swami Jayananda, signing off. Have a wonderful Kriya Yoga kind of day. Namaste.